Welcome to the very first Musings on Sports, a weekly podcast of stories that will range from the 19th hole to the tailgate party. I'm Kelly Elbin here with my co-host Bob Bupka, who just might be older than daylight savings time. Hey, Bob, thanks to your persistence, Musings on Sports is now a reality, and we're going to have a whole lot of fun bringing some great storytelling to our listeners.
Well, I enjoyed so much, Kelly, what you were writing on Facebook, Musings. And I said to myself, why not? Let's turn this into a podcast where people can be driving in their car and they can listen to what we're going to be putting together, a collection of history, a collection of some great stories. I mean, I've been blessed to have been at numerous sporting events, and always something out of the unusual happens that doesn't really get reported in the mainstream media, as you well know, Kelly. So that's what Musing on Sports is going to be all about.
Well, that's right. And you know, along the way, we're going to have some great guests. Our very first guest today, Jim Nance, is a special friend to both of us. And, you know, we know our fair share of people in the world of sports, Bob. I've been doing this for a while, but man, you're the voice of golf. And for very good reason. Remind me, how many years have you reported on golf, covered golf tournaments, and along that way, how many major golf championships does that encompass?
Well, I started covering golf back in 1981, which is a story in itself. We'll share that at a later point. But at the risk of telling you how old I am, I've covered over 125 majors, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out, hey, wait a minute, there's only four majors a year. This guy's covered 125? Wow, he's long of the tooth. Well, all it means is I've been very blessed to have had the opportunity to be at the four greatest events each year in the world of golf. Then throw in Ryder Cups, which I think may be the single best golf event there is. I've been very blessed.
Well, I think very blessed is true, my friend. And along the way, great memories, great stories, Bob. And that's, again, why Musings on Sports exist. And that's what we're going to be able to do and to convey a lot of those great stories. I've been fortunate as well. And I've been at a few of those major championships with you. I've been at a few of those Ryder Cups with you. Just as a little bit of background, I mean, I've written about sports and really, Bob, like you in so many ways, sports has been my passion. Hell, it's been my business for most of my life. I've been fortunate to have really done some cool things. I caddied for Lee Trevino in the 1979 Ryder Cup. I was a statistician for 3 years for the Washington Redskins radio network. They were losing seasons, which is about the way it's been for the past 20 years with that organization. And I've sat next to, you know, the very best players in the game of golf. I did that for just under a decade while I was with the PGA of America. But I hadn't, frankly, up until about this time last year, I hadn't written as much as I wanted to. I'm sort of a writer by nature, and I just decided I wanted to write more. So I started writing a weekly column on my Facebook page that you mentioned. It's called My Monday Musings. And I really based it on the bullet points that Larry King wrote so successfully all those years, about 20 years in all, in USA Today. I think your listeners will remember those dot, dot, dots that appeared in the life section of USA Today. And if I could mimic Larry's voice in that time, it was, you know, caught up with my old pal Liz Taylor, who tells me she has a new movie in the works, dot, dot, dot. The addition of Barry Bonds, Doug Drabik, and Greg Maddux means the NL West remains baseball's absolute best. Dot, dot, dot. If it's ice cream, make mine chocolate chip and add an extra scoop. I mean, it was just stuff like that. And I decided to use that as a foundation, expand on a few topics each week, steer clear of politics. I'm not going down that rabbit hole. And Bob, I've really been appreciative and and honored that you and so many others have enjoyed what I've written. You're the one who inspired us to start this, to get where we are with Musings on Sports, and so here we are.
Well, let me just clarify one thing. My partner here, Kelly Elvin, did not know Liz Taylor personally, because if he had, he would have been her 11th husband. So I know you're creating a great story there, Kel, and that's just an indication of some of the things that we're going to be talking about. People, when they listen to Musings on Sports, are going to walk away saying, gee, I didn't know that. Gee, that was funny. Gee, that was interesting. Those are the guidelines that we're shooting for. We're not going to tell you about five irons that the golfers hit, or football players that made a pass. By the way, football players, we got to mention Tom Brady, already tired of retirement, and that's the quickest
40 days.
Quickest retirement. The only guy I feel sorry for. What about you, Kelly? The guy that purchased the football that was the billed as Tom Brady's last touchdown pass. He paid $500,000 for it. Now,
yeah, I don't know if I can feel sorry for a guy who's ponying up that kind of money, but yeah, I think he thought the value of that ball was going to be worth a lot more. And then, right the next day, Brady comes out of the desert 40 days after going into retirement, and he's back.
Yeah, I think the air is out of that football.
You talk about Deflategate. Hey, we couldn't have a better first guest than the face and voice of CBS Sports, Jim Nantz. We're going to hear from Jim in a little bit, but Bob, we did just finally, not we, but the players and the spectators finally got through the Players' Championship outside of Jacksonville after unbelievable deluge of rain and heavy winds that forced the Players to a Monday finish. Cameron Smith, the mullet man, got the victory. But I know that win also, or excuse me, those conditions kind of brought back some interesting memories of your own battle with Mother Nature.
It really did. I think back to the Senior Open in Peabody, Massachusetts at Salem. Mm. And it was a Saturday, and the weather forecast was not a good one. They predicted thunderstorms to come into the area. We were in the media center, which was just a little tent. Maybe there was 10 of us from the media in attendance. And on Saturday afternoon, it started to get darker and darker, Kel. And we kept saying to one another, when are they going to blow that horn? It was just scary. And we look up on the monitors and we see Jack Nicklaus getting ready to tee off on 18. And Jack tees off. Jack hits his second shot. Jack gets up on the green. And trust me when I tell you, Jack's putt didn't even get halfway down when the siren blew. In other words, they were waiting for Jack. They were not going to call him off the golf course. They bring him into the media room, and we're sitting there, and that storm hits, and boom, actually the clubhouse got damaged by a bolt of lightning. And you can imagine we're in this little tent, and when that bolt of lightning hit, I jumped up and I grabbed Jack Nicklaus's hand, and he said, what the hell's going on? I said, Jack, I know God's not going to hit you. I'm going to hold on here for just a few minutes.
You knew the right man to grab hold of, didn't you?
I certainly did, and I'm the only guy Jack ever saved from lightning.
It's classic. Yeah, I can remember the 2008 Ryder Cup at Valhalla. Got there on Saturday, the week of the event, and Sunday, the storms that roared through Louisville were such that it basically kind of ripped up the media center. And that was at the start of the week. I'm going to tell you something, Bob. Had that been during, the week, during play or when spectators were there, it could have been a real, real problem. And as it turned out in the end, of course, it was all all good for the U.S. winning that Ryder Cup under Captain Azinger. But yeah, Mother Nature, never going to back down when it comes to golf tournaments, is she?
No, that's the one thing about golf. It does rely on Mother Nature, and we certainly saw that in full bloom this past weekend at the Players' Championship. I mean, we had wind, we had rain, we had cold temperatures. We had a little bit of everything thrown into that mix. But one point, and I want to run this by you, Kel, I haven't said this to anybody else, but watching that event and constantly hearing the announcers refer to the first prize check of $3.6 million. I mean, that's a lot of money. I kept thinking, what about the caddy? Under normal caddy arrangements, a caddy at that event winning probably was going to collect around $400,000. Now, I said to myself, can you imagine a caddy standing on that 71st hole, that treacherous par 3, and his player says, what do you want me to hit? And the caddy's thinking, $400,000. I don't know what to tell you. $400,000. I was on that tee. I remember distinctly being on that tee when Nick Price came up and Squeaky Medlin was his caddy. And sure. Nick said to Squeak, what do you want me to hit? And Squeaky said, well, Nick, it's either an easy 8-iron or a hard 9. Nick Price said, give me that damn 9-iron. I'm too nervous to swing easy at an 8-iron. So, you know, those players feel the pressure. But I got to believe the caddy certainly was feeling the pressure, too, staring at that $400,000 payday.
Well, and you're right. And no more pressure-packed holes than 17. And then you stand on the tee at 18, Bob. I mean, obviously, you can't hit it left. You know, you hit a little too far to the right, then you've got a really long second shot in there at the 18th at the stadium course. And I know that Cameron Smith struggled with it yesterday, but he was able, because he had made birdie at 17, he was able to get it done. But yeah, it's a pretty good payday. I mean, 403, usually tour caddies get what, 10% of the winnings, which would come out to about 360,000. You may toss another 40 in there to get it to 400.
Right.
Now that's a pretty good, that's a pretty good way to survive or to get through those 5 days of wind and rain, huh?
I can't wait to see Cam Smith, because the last time I was with him, we were in Hawaii, and we're at the airport together, and we're both in line at Starbucks. And I said, what do you want, Cam? And he was with his girlfriend, so I got their order, and I bought the Starbucks, and we sat down and had coffee. Trust me, next time I'm seeing him, he's giving me that damn money back, anybody that makes $3.6 million.
Or at least he's buying you the coffee this time.
You got a good point there.
You know, Bob's in Houston. I'm in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, having worked for the PGA for a long time, no longer with them. But Palm Beach Gardens is about a four-hour drive down I-95 from where the Players was held in Ponte Vedra Beach. And Bob, I know the folks here who count on the revenues from spring training games here in Florida, in Arizona. Man, are they relieved that the owners and the Players finally struck a deal. And exhibition games are starting this week. You're going to have a frenzy of moves taking place leading up to the start of the regular season on April 7th. I think that you're going to see some really cool change. You're going to see the designated hitter in the National League this year. I'm a big fan of it. You're going to see 12 teams in the postseason this year. I think you're going to see a lot more exciting game in general at the Major League Baseball level. Hell, next year, you've got larger bases in the works. You've got no defensive shifts. Apparently, the shifts that I think are really a scourge for baseball are going to be done away with. And I think the fans in general are going to benefit. It's going to bring more people to the game. Bob, you know, having grown up in on Long Island and knowing that area and knowing up in New England, the passion for baseball, particularly among New Englanders. And I know you have a really cool story about the legendary Red Sox, Carl Yastrzemski. Did you guys go to high school together? Is that what it was?
Well, we went to high schools 4 miles apart, And he was a senior. I was a freshman. And I was brought into in relief. And Carl was up. And to tell you that I was shaking, that's putting it mildly. Well, I threw it, and he hit it. And it went. And it went. And it went. But it went right into my center fielder's glove. Of course, we didn't have fences, so this ball went about 800 feet. Would have been out of any stadium that they play in. And I was at Cooperstown when he was being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I said, Carl, I can't believe they're letting you in the Hall of Fame. You couldn't even get a hit against me. And he got a good chuckle out of that. And I've been friends with the Yastrzemski family for a long, long time. Knew Carl's dad very well. And he's one of the few stories where a parent, Carl's senior, who was a hell of a player in his own right, he said when Carl Jr. was 4.5 years old, anybody that would listen, his dad said, my son is going to be a major league baseball player. And he worked with his son and worked with his son. Son actually went to Notre Dame to start his career after high school. Didn't last long at Notre Dame because he played the game so well. And then went on to spend 23 years with the Red Sox, just one team. And as you so very well put, legendary up in the New England area.
Well, and it's pretty cool that his grandson, Mike, has carried on the Yastrzemski name, playing for the San Francisco Giants, and really good player in his own right.
Yeah, absolutely. That is good. And, you know, Carl Sr., he's up there in age now. He did lose his son at age 42 due to a heart attack. So even the best, you know, have their own trials and tribulations. Carl's a real golf nut. He bought a house in Florida that used to be owned by Sam Snead. And Carl liked to play by himself. He'd get to the golf course about 6 o'clock in the morning, just tee off and go play 18 holes. Pretty good golfer, but really not big on socializing and being friends with a lot of different people. I forgot one other thing about Carl. I still don't forgive him. I married a Yastrzemski, and Carl came to my wedding. And what does he give as a wedding present? A sterling silver tea set. And I can remember at the reception saying, you know, back in those days, everybody bought their present. I said, Carl, what the hell am I going to do with a sterling silver tea set? Oh, I thought you would like it, Bob. I said, geez, Carl, you really disappointed me. I thought I was going to get some big elaborate gift. I get a tea set.
Or maybe at least something autographed by Yas, huh?
No, God. Carl was great. Carl was a great basketball player. People don't know this, Kel. He held the Long Island scoring record for nearly 20 years in basketball. Not many people know that.
Well, that's I didn't know that, but I'm not surprised. You have, you know, so many of the great players are great athletes, you know, in general. And hey, Bob, this is by far this week the busiest week in sports, the way, particularly with now the Major League Baseball strike having ended. We've got a lot more to cover on Musings on Sports. But first, let's have a word from our friends at Bridgestone Golf.
Today, there are smarter phones, smarter cars, smarter everything. So Bridgestone Golf's engineers thought, why not a smarter golf ball? Introducing the new Tour B, with a smart reactive IQ cover that delivers more power off your driver. More control off your wedges. Try Bridgestone's new Tour B with Reactive IQ Cover. The smarter tour ball.
Hey, Bob, it's so good to have the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament, you know, as we know it, finally back with first-round games set for Thursday at regional sites. You've got fans in the stands. You've got bands playing. You've got the mascots all over the place. It's been a long 2 years. For lots of reasons with COVID, for lots of people, and the basketball tournament was was one that struggled with it. Personally, I'm excited. My Richmond Spiders are back in the tournament for the first time in 11 years. Looking forward to that. In my Monday musings on Facebook, I wrote about the 1984 game when Richmond really got on the map for the first time as far as collegiate basketball, when really a bunch of unknown players on a 12th-seeded team knocked off Charles Barkley and Chuck Person in Charlotte, beating Auburn in the process by a point, which really kind of began a series of David and Goliaths for Richmond, where they beat Bob Knight a few years later. Then in 91, Richmond became the first 12 seed to beat the first 15 seed to beat a 2 seed when they knocked off Jim Boeheim's team at Syracuse. So a lot of excitement coming up. How you doing in your bracket, by the way?
Well, I had quite a streak. I can't remember the year. I do a lot of sports betting, and college basketball is one of my favorites. We were at Honda, and the tournament had started. The NCAA had started. And I made 17 consecutive right picks. 17. Whoa. I didn't know what was happening. I was tormented about, Bob, you got to get on a plane and get to Las Vegas. This is a one in a lifetime opportunity. But I doubled up pretty big on number 18 and went down the tube. So, but I never forget. 17 in a row, pretty tough to do in the NCAAs.
Pretty darn good. And I know the odds of I don't even know what those odds are to fill out a perfect bracket. No one's ever done. Warren Buffett always tosses that out, by the way, Bob, of paying some hefty sum if anybody picks a perfect bracket. Of course, no one ever does. But that's the excitement of it. That's the, you know, really, there's just nothing else like that noon Eastern on Thursday when the first set of games are set to go and people are revved up, and maybe you've taken the day off from work. Maybe you've decided to saddle on up to a local bar to watch some games with some buddies. And maybe you just happen to be there all day and you've got your brackets next to you. It's as good as it gets as a sports fan, isn't it?
Well, there's nothing better. A lot of pools and a lot of things on the NCAAs. And as far as sports betting, I never ever in my lifetime, Kelly Elbin, thought I would see the day when I'm watching a PGA Tour event and I'm hearing, how to bet and where to bet. I'm hearing more about betting than I'm hearing about practicing golf or playing golf. Forget playing golf. Forget practicing. Bet, 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 bet. Of course, it's a major revenue now for professional golf, and it's only going to continue to grow.
Well, and it is professional golf. Obviously, it's been very much a part of the NFL for a long time. But yeah, you see it really on the broadcast. It's become commonplace almost anymore with golf telecasts. You'll see it more with Major League Baseball. Hey, I want to one other note before we move on, actually a couple notes. I really like Tennessee in this tournament, Bob. I have a good buddy of mine. He and his wife went up to see the SEC championship in Tampa, and Tennessee won the SEC tournament for the first time in 43 years. Man, they're guard play. They're two big men. They're really, really good. I expect Tennessee. They frankly should have been a number two seed. I think they got jobbed quite a bit on that. They're a number three seed. I expect them to be in New Orleans for the Final Four. New Orleans is a pretty good town, is it not, Bob, for a Final Four? And I believe you've attended a few Final Fours, right?
I have, and no better place than New Orleans because, you know, you have your two games on Saturday, and then you head down towards Bourbon Street and hope to survive until Monday. By
That's
the way,
right. Yeah.
Ironically enough, you mentioned the University of Tennessee. Before we talked about University of Richmond, and somebody that went to my brother's school where he teaches or coaches basketball and had Kenny Wood. You know, Kenny's brother, Howard Wood, went to the University of Tennessee. and had a pretty good career there. So I like Tennessee. But getting back to Bourbon Street, I remember one time, even though it was a little foggy, it was about 2 in the morning, and I'm walking down Bourbon Street with two or three of my mates, and there's a guy barely clinging to this light pole. And it was when Georgetown was playing, and I walked over to him. I said, "Hey, sir, can you tell me what a Hoyer is?" And much to my chagrin, he starts to undo his pants with this comment, "I'll show you what a Hoyer is." And we scuttled away from there as fast as we could. But New Orleans, a great place to watch the game.
How many Final Fours have you covered?
I've been to 11. The best one, Villanova knocking off Georgetown in Rupp Arena, 1985. Villanova played the perfect game.
Yeah, was it right? They had to. It was the shocker of shockers, based on the quality of the talent of those two teams. But they did. They literally almost played a perfect game, didn't they?
Yeah, they really did. It was nobody going to that game that night thought Villanova had a chance. And they did. You know, that's getting back to what you alluded to. That's what makes it so great. I don't care if you're a big school, small school. It doesn't matter. You really have a shot in the NCAAs that, you know, one game, anything can happen. Well, I guarantee you something's going to happen even this year that everybody's going to say, "Well, I never saw that coming." But that's why I love it.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned Kenny Wood at Richmond, who was on that 91 team that beat Syracuse. Hey, man, who knows? There could be somebody on this team, this Richmond team this year, who pulls off that. If they beat Iowa, if they beat somebody else, it could go into the Richmond Hall of Fame, just like Kenny Wood did for his basketball.
But hey, Bob, let's segue back to golf. You know, I'm playing a lot of golf. I know a lot of people are playing the game. The numbers are way up. And you know as well as I do that golfers are always trying to find the right golf ball for their game. So right after we hear from our friends at Titleist, you and I get a chance to talk basketball and golf with the great Jim Nance.
Titleist is the number one ball in golf. Yes, being number one is a number, and more players trust the Pro V1 or Pro V1X than all other golf balls combined. But being number one is more than a number. It's a mindset. It's a relentless mission to design and manufacture the best performing golf balls in the game, so you can chase whatever your number one is. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Well, we'd like to welcome in our first guest on our very first podcast. You know, Bob, March Madness tips off this week, and with that begins quite a sports odyssey, from basketball's greatest event all the way through to golf's grandest stage. I can't think of anyone better to talk about it than the longtime lead play-by-play announcer for CBS Sports, Jim Nance. Jim, welcome to Musings on Sports.
Well, Kelly, it's great. We've known each other for a long time, and I'm honored to be on podcast number one with you and Bob, who's another longtime friend. Bob and Janice were out on the PGA Tour every week for years, working hard, talking to the best players in the sport, and I'm just honored to be on with you two.
Well, Mr. Bufka, I know that relationship goes both ways.
Well, it certainly does. Jim's been a class act. For the longest time, and you know, before we get into all the other stuff, I woke up in the middle of the night and I said, boy, I have to ask Jim this. You know, your options are: you can cover another Final Four, you can cover a Masters, you can cover a Super Bowl. Which of those would you choose, Jim? Do you have a preference?
Well, I have a stock answer, which I'll dispense with, but since I'm talking to two buddies, I'm going to give you the real answer from the heart. The stock answer is the NFL, college basketball, and golf, and their three biggest events, the Masters, the Final Four, and the Super Bowl. Which one do I love the most? Well, I'm a father of three. It's like asking a father, which child do you love the most? It's impossible. Okay, that's my stock answer. My real answer is deep inside of my heart, the Masters is always number one for me. Did I just say that publicly for the first time? I think I did. But that's how I feel. The Masters was the draw for me as a young boy. It inspired me to want to be in this business one day. And I have Augusta on the brain 365. So I love all of these events. I truly do. And I truly love all my children the same. But I do, as far as my professional side, love the Masters just a little bit more.
Well, you'd be amazed to hear this. I'm asked all the time if I can only do one event, which one would it be? And my public answer is the Open Championship. I think it's just the greatest. But in reality, I say, well, there's four things: the Masters, the Super Bowl, the NCAA, and the Open Championship, and the party that Jim Nantz has at Pebble Beach during the Pebble Beach Pro-Am each and every year. If I could be at that one, that's my number one desire.
You're my first invitee for next year, Bob. You guys are on the new list, that's for sure. I love that event, too.
I'm leaving right now. I'm going to sit outside your door for a year.
Come on by. I'll give you the gate code. Yeah.
Hey, Jim, when you wrap things up with the championship game at the Final Four and head to Augusta, when you get to Magnolia Lane, are the butterflies still there a little bit when you drive up, even though it's been so many years you've been the lead announcer?
If it's possible, Kelly, I enjoy it incrementally just a little bit more every year. I don't know how that's possible, but like here we are now, 3 weeks out, and I'm just getting all super excited and just dreaming of being there. Now, in the meantime, I've got 12 basketball games to call between now and Augusta, including six this week, three next week at the regionals, and three at the Final Four. So I want to enjoy the ride. I want to live in the present. And I do know, though, in the back of my mind, that on that Tuesday, I'm going to roll into town on April the 5th, and I'm going to have this sudden jolt of energy just overtake me, and I'm getting set for another glorious week of calling the event that, as a young boy, I can only dream of, hoping one day I could be one of the voices of that tournament.
Well, and as we sort of segue into the NCAA men's basketball tournament and the excitement that you share for it, this will be your 36th year of being the lead announcer for CBS Sports, so for calling the Final Four and the championship game. And while we're going to reminisce a bit and go down memory lane, I've got to think, Jim, that like so many, you've got to be thrilled to get back to full arenas and to get back to regional sites. And in some way that the NCAA tournament is getting back to what it was before we all went through the very difficult times, and they continue for many of COVID.
Well, the reality is that when COVID first hit America and we realized we had a huge enemy to take on, the first sports casualty of the pandemic was the NCAA tournament of 2020.
Right.
It got taken off the books. And everybody was able to adapt later on, given some time, all the way through having the Masters competed in November of 2020, having the Super Bowl in February of 21 with just a partial crowd, those health workers who had already been immunized. And it's just hard to believe now with the NCAA tournament just about to get underway that it's been since 2019 that we had what we know as the NCAA tournament. Last year, we were in Indianapolis. I was there for 27 days calling the Big Ten tournament, calling the NCAA tournament, all the various rounds of it with just extremely partial crowds, not allowed to leave my hotel room because of CBS health and safety protocols, having all my meals delivered to my door, only leaving to go call the games. And like I said, being there for the better part of a month. So now here we are on the precipice of getting it started again with full stadiums, full excitement. And, you know, the crowd really does make college basketball. The energy that you get from the crowd is just, you can't describe it. So what we have waiting for us down in New Orleans when we get there in 2 weeks, we'll have 70,000 people inside the dome waiting to scream their lungs out with all the passion and energy that they can muster. And I'm just thrilled by that. And then the next week, the Masters is going to feel somewhat normal for the first time from that November unattended Masters for patrons to last year with just whatever it was, I don't know the exact head count, 5,000 to 10,000 people. It's going to be a different scene and vibe, and I am just thrilled to have all that straight ahead.
Do you have any favorite moments, Jim, over the course of your career at the NCAA tournament? I know one of certainly working with Bill Rafferty is quite a treat. I mean, he's a legend in his own right. But when you think back, anything jump out at you?
Oh, there's a lot that jumps out at me. I had an 18-year run with Billy Packer. Billy just recently celebrated his 80th birthday. I love the guy. And Bill Raftery, we've been calling the Final Four since 2015 with Grant Hill. So we have a three-man booth, a great three-way friendship, and it's just a ton of fun. It's a lot of preparation. It's a lot of getting to know teams that you might not be familiar with that have made it to the NCAA tournament, but the whole process is a joyride. Now, you're probably talking more specifically about some of the games that stood out. And my goodness, I could go through it year by year, but a few things that pop into mind. You know, I had those Duke back-to-back national championships during the Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley days of 91 and 92. That was an amazing time for the game. And really, when I go back to the 90s, you realize that a lot of players stayed in school longer, and some were four-year players, like Grant. Grant played all 4 years. A player that has today Grant's talent, you get him for 1 year, and we got Grant for 4 years. So it's different. The teams back then had more firepower because they had more continuity and more stars staying on board for a long time, but you know, I think back to the championship game I really enjoyed most recently was in 2016 in Houston. And there was a shot at the buzzer that Villanova hit to take the title over North Carolina. And, you know, that was a thrill.
Jim, has there been one of the teams since you started, I believe you started in 1990 with Billy in Denver when UNLV beat Duke that year. Has there been one team over that period of time that stood out at the top of the mountaintop, maybe kind of the best of all the NCAA championship winners to you?
Well, there was a Kentucky team that won the championship in 96, and they were just loaded with the guys that made their way on to the NBA. Rick Pitino was the coach. And again, that kind of backs up my point from earlier. You know, these were teams that had gelled and had the longevity of building something special through 4 years and over 100 games together. You know, the Duke team, though, that had in 92 that repeated, our last repeat national champion. I mean, you think of Christian Laettner, who was an Olympian and one of the most decorated collegiate basketball players of all time. Yeah. And Bobby Hurley, who was a first-round draft pick also, who had his career, unfortunately, as a player cut short because of an accident. And then you had Grant Hill, who was the third overall pick in the draft, and he had a lingering foot issue. Otherwise, I think a lot of people thought he was on his way to being in that upper echelon with Michael Jordan, eventually what Kobe Bryant would be. I mean, Grant had real rare, rare talent. And that was an amazing team. The one that went back-to-back beat in the championship game, the Fab Five of Michigan.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was an exciting time for the game. The first team to field five freshman starters, and they made it all the way as freshmen to the championship game before Duke beat them by 20 in the final, only to see Michigan come back in 93 and go against Dean Smith's North Carolina team. And the game was coming down to the wire, and as you'll recall, Michigan took a timeout that it did not have. They were out of timeouts with about 10 seconds to go, and North Carolina hit the free throws off the technical and won the championship. So, man, there have been, again, there have been so many fabulous memories. In 2010, Duke played in Indianapolis in the championship game against Butler. Butler being a mid-major in a school that was only 6.2 miles from the center of campus to Lucas Oil Stadium. And just this matchup of the giant program against the little guy, and Gordon Hayward put up a shot at the buzzer right in front of me. I was calling the game with Clark Kellogg. I had a great ride with Clark through the years calling games after Billy. And you could tell as soon as it left his hand, we had the angle on it, that it was right online. And it ended up probably 47 feet, being 1/4 of an inch too high off the glass. Otherwise, it would have been the greatest game ender in the history of college basketball, maybe even in sport, to hit a half-court heave to win a national championship. It was as close as you could get.
Yeah, and little Hinkle Fieldhouse, where they played, as you said, just down the street, was quite a contrast from playing in that dome and that program, and how far he took that program to get to that point against Duke.
That was Brad Stevens, the coach, and they ended up being in the championship game the following year too, and lost to UConn down in Houston in 2011. But yeah, that Butler program was rooted in a foundation there that was very Hoosiers-like from the movie days of Gene Hackman and the Milan High School story and old Hinkle Fieldhouse. And one of the thrills for me last year during the doldrums of being stuck in a hotel room, not being able to leave but to go call games because of the pandemic, and having to spend a better part of a month in one city with only allowed to go out to broadcast. So I did get to go call games from Hinkle, and that was a thrill. I mean, Billy Rapp and Grant and I called a handful of games from Hinkle in the early rounds, and you could just feel all the history when you entered the building.
You talk about the combination of class and class. I can't think of a better example than Jim Nance calling the game, Coach K coaching Duke. This is going to be his last run. What a contribution, not only to sports and especially basketball, than Coach K has made over the years. He has done it with extreme talent, but also a lot of dignity.
Well said, Bob, about Coach K. And I have to tell you, my career has really paralleled the Coach K's years at Duke in this respect. In 1986, my first experience broadcasting the Final Four was as the host, if you will, the pregame, the halftime, the postgame host from the studio that was built inside of the arena. That was a Louisville national championship under Denny Crum. And that was Coach K's first Final Four team. That was the Johnny Dawkins team with Jay Billis and Mark Allery and David Henderson and Tommy Amaker. And so Coach K's first Final Four for Duke was my first Final Four. And then 5 years later, I took over for Brent Musburger as the play-by-play voice of the NCAA tournament, working alongside Billy. And Coach K's first national championship was my first national championship game, calling it. So I've had all these experiences. I've called all five of his national championships, and now here he is. This is the biggest storyline going into this year's tournament, is how far can Duke go? Is it possible that Coach K gets to go all the way to the championship game and maybe even win it like Al McGuire did years and years ago back in 1977 when he took Marquette to the national title in Atlanta and then stepped down. But any way you slice it, Mike's effect and legacy, he's one of the iconic figures in the history of coaching, not just college basketball, And I'm just anxious to see what the final chapter will bring.
Yeah, Jim, and the his presence and that team's play will definitely be they're going to be a major player again. You know, you had late in February, you had an unprecedented 7 of the top 10 AP teams lose on the same day. I mean, you've got what appears to be, as we head into the start of March Madness, yeah, you've got your Dukes and your some of your other blue bloods, but it's wide open in many ways, Jim.
Boy, you're right. That weekend on it was actually the day was Saturday, February 26th, and the top six teams, and you're right, 7 of the top 10 lost on the same day, including 1 through 6. And I just thought that really set up this year's NCAA tournament. You said it so well. This is, you go in always with the knowledge that the Cinderella lives inside this event more than any other sporting event in this country. And that's really a big part of the appeal of March Madness is that are these upsets, is the little guy's story. And to see that day happen a few weeks back, to know that you're going into the NCAA tournament and it's such a level playing field, my goodness. And then you factor in the fact we had crowds for the first time in 3 years back restored to the way it used to be. It's set up to be just a fabulous NCAA tournament.
When you did your first Masters, it was 1986. Obviously, everyone knows that was Jack's sixth green jacket. To this day, easily the greatest Masters ever played. And Ken Venturi had some very wise words for you after the conclusion of that 86 Masters. Could you share that with our listeners?
I was on the 16th hole for what was my first Masters, and Jack made a pivotal birdie on Sunday, a birdie that would tie the lead. He would then, of course, take the lead at 17 with another birdie. I said the bear had come out of hibernation. And anyway, I stayed in my perch until the broadcast ended, and now I'm walking back, not riding in a cart. I'm walking back from down at 16 all the way to the CBS compound, which is, I'd say, better part of 3/4 mile away. And all of a sudden, the golf cart comes racing up next alongside, and it was Ken Venturi in the cart. And he said, Jimmy, you heading back to the compound? I said, yes, sir, Mr. Venturi. He said, jump in, I'll give you a ride. He said, how old are you, young man? And I said, I'm 26, sir. I was just raised in a yes or no, sir, kind of environment, you know, with my mom and dad, my Charlotte, North Carolina upbringing. And he said, I'm going to make a prediction. Kenny was just so euphoric. He was just downright giddy what he had just watched and broadcast, Jack's historic sixth green jacket. He said, someday you're going to live to see 50 of these Masters. You're going to broadcast 50 of these. And I thought, wow, that's a profound statement to make. I'm just hoping to be invited back for year two. And he said, but I can promise you this, son, you will never see a Masters bigger than this. And there were a whole lot of things that I took out of that. Number one, he called me Jimmy, which was what my mom and dad and all my wife, my closest friends have always called me Jimmy. My dad was Jim, Big Jim, and I was Jimmy. So there was a closeness with the way he said that. And he called me son, which was very paternal. And at the same time, he thought, I guess I had enough ability. He made this proclamation that I would work 50 Masters. And then there was a little bit of a downer. I have to admit that he said, I would never live to see another Masters as great as this. I thought it's all downhill. But my head was spinning after this, that Venturi had been so kind and had made these projections. And I went back to the compound, sitting in the cart with Ken, and I walked up to Frank Cherkinian, the legendary founder of Golf Television, and I thanked him for the chance to be a part of the tapestry of this historic broadcast. And I asked him if I had done everything all right, and half apologized for saying that Bear had come out of hibernation, because in my mind, somebody must have already said that somewhere on the broadcast. I didn't know where that came from, how that landed in my brain. And I thought if I had repeated something that maybe had been said down at 10 by Bob Murphy or 11 and 12 by Steve Melnick or Weisskopf or somebody on one of the early holes, that wouldn't be so cool to repeat it. So I said, on that line, I said, Mr. Trecanian, a bear has come out of hibernation. I think I maybe, repeated something that had been said. He said, no, son, only you. Only you. It was a great line. Now get the hell out of here. And you're coming back next year. Frankly, I had this rough, tough love kind of a guy. But, man, what a mentor he was, just like Ken was to me. And, my goodness, how fortunate and blessed I've been back every year since. And this will be Masters number 37 for me in 3 weeks' time.
You'll get to 50, Jim.
You know what? I want to get to 51, Kelly. I was telling that story at an event in Los Angeles about 10 years ago. I was getting an award, and as bizarre as this sounds, Venturi was my co-presenter with Jack Whitaker. I mean, it was an honor. They were presenting me for this award, and I got to have told the story about that first encounter with Ken that meant so much to me. And later that night, we were sitting around having a nightcap, and Mr. Whitaker said, now, here are these two men, both who are now passed on, and I delivered the eulogy at both of their funerals. But Jack Whitaker looked at me and said, I heard what you said up there about 50 Masters. He said, that was interesting. I said, really? What did you take note of? He says, it's not the right number for you, Jimmy. I said, why is that? He says, you need to do 51. I said, well, why is that? He says, because if you do the math on it, the 51st Masters for you will be the 100th playing of the Masters tournament. And when the Masters turns 100, you need to be there, and Augusta needs you to be there. I thought, whoa, okay. So let's realign my goals, my career goals. It was a powerful thing. And he took the Venturi original line and added to it. And I got to tell you, that has always been the thing that's been in the back of my mind. What do I want to do with this business? Well, I want longevity. I want to be able to have the scope and perspective to see things for about that amount of time. And that's all I've ever wanted. I don't desire anything. I'm grateful for everything I've had. I don't long or desire anything. I'm grateful for having the events that I do have.
Wow.
In closing, being grateful for what you have and that scope and that perspective that you mentioned, if you don't mind maybe taking a shot at this as we project ahead, are you willing to maybe give a favorite that you have in mind to win the NCAA men's basketball tournament and someone who you think might be slipping on the green jacket in April?
Wow. You're talking about putting me on the spot, but Kelly, I've got to say that I think Gonzaga has enough parts back from last year's national runner-up team, including Drew Timmy, to be able to be there on Monday night in New Orleans. The storybook finish would be Coach K and Duke, and they definitely have that ability too. So I'm not going to go out on a limb, although I will say my alma mater, the University of Houston, plays great defense, and they will be a tough out. They made it to the Final Four last year, so that would be very cool. Now, when you get to Augusta, my goodness, I mean, where do you go with that? And we're learning as this year goes on that we're getting a whole slew of first-time winners and more people who are credentialed and have the ability to win. It's easy to be able to go with a Morikawa or a John Rahm, the big stars of the game, but it's so widened out. It's so much broader at the upper echelon of the sport now. It's not 10 guys, it's 50 guys. I'll go Patrick Cantlay. I just like his game. He's got a classical way about him. I could see that. Now I'm going to go off a guy that played well on the West Coast and won, and that was Scottie Scheffler. They won at Phoenix. He's young. He's gotten his first win. I've seen his track record in major events. He's always done well. So that's a bit of a dark horse, if you will. But he's going to be a huge factor in the years to come. So maybe it starts in April.
Well, that's terrific. Jim, I can't thank you enough. And Bob, I'm going to turn it over to you to send off our good friend Jim Nance.
Thanks, Kelly.
Well, thank you, Kelly. And, you know, Jim, listening to you talk, I'm like a fan. I mean, you make everything sound so good.
Right back at you, pal.
Well, thanks for taking this time out, Jim. And, you know, have a lot of fun at the NCAAs. We hope to see you down at Augusta. And continued success as you march towards number 51.
Hey, Bob, that was just such a special time to be able to spend those few minutes with Jim Nance. There's really no one else like him that I know of. He's the longevity, the style, the class, the hello friends. I mean, Jim Nance has really become, you know, such a fixture in the world of sports now for such a long time for so many viewers.
No, you're right about that. And I'll be candid. I mean, you and I, we're very fortunate. Our occupations have allowed us to become friends with Jim Nance. And as classy an act as he seems on television, I'm here to say in person, he's even classier than that. I mean, it's a true inspiration to listen to him.
Well, Bob, we sure had a lot of fun with this very first Musings on Sports podcast. Musings on Sports will drop every Tuesday, and you can hear it wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Our guest next week will be the great Johnny Holiday, who's just completed his 43rd year as the play-by-play voice for the University of Maryland men's basketball team and football team. Johnny's a great storyteller. Can't wait to hear from him.
Well, I'm excited about having an opportunity to spend some time with Johnny Holiday. I've heard a lot of great things about that man and what a career at the University of Maryland. And he's going to be right here with us, Kelly Elbin, Bob Bupka, next week on Musings on Sports.